Welcome to episode 2 of the Marketing Development Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Everett, and today we've got a brilliant episode with the one and only Rob Watson. Before we get to Rob, though, don't forget that we have a Facebook group. If you head on over to peteeverett.com/group, it'll redirect you on. And we really want to build a community where we can share experiences, new ideas, struggles, really just support each other as marketing professionals. So, without further ado, here's me and Rob. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to a conversation between me and Rob Watson, who runs his own business called Click to Sale. Hi, Rob. How are you doing?
Hi, Pete. Good, thanks. You?
Yeah, very well. Very well, thank you, mate. Would you like to just give us a quick introduction about who you are, what you do, where you come from, all of that kind of stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. So I, as you've said, my name is Rob Watson. I'm a freelance digital marketing consultant. And I've been in and around marketing for a lot of years, far too many years. So really, really quick potted history. So I worked straight from school in insurance and decided what I really wanted to do was go into marketing. So did a marketing degree full time down at Southampton, then went into a variety of marketing roles. I started more at the sort of corporate end, working for the likes of Aviva and Virgin Media and that sort of size company. And then in later years sort of segued more into a bit more of an SME specialist. So in-house marketing roles for most of my marketing career. It's only really the last couple of years that I've gone freelance, focusing on as a digital specialist on sort of online lead generation. I always describe myself as kind of a content and traffic specialist. So fairly broad in terms of different medias, probably SEO the main one. I'm an Google AdWords partner. I look at a lot of things like paid social media, and I do end up doing a lot of copywriting work, sometimes as part of an SEO project or sometimes just a revamp of a website. So that's me in a nutshell. I'm quite sort of an old school CIM qualified marketer as well, and also do a bit of tutoring on the side on the digital marketing qualification for one of the CIM's accredited study centers. So that's me in a nutshell.
Okay, that sounds cool. So I'd like to pick up a little bit on your some of the bigger organizations that you've worked for in the past, and then what kind of moved you down to working for yourself and sort of scaling down, I suppose, the size of companies that you're working with. But just before we do that, just thinking about your current clients, I see from your website you obviously offer a range of services. How do you sort of go about marketing yourself with those? Do you tend to go in with sort of one particular service or sale, for example, and then broaden out, or do you find that people come for a range of services? How do you sort of generally see that working?
I don't particularly lead with any, but there's the reason that it's quite natural that I end up doing a lot of SEO work, because it is such a significant channel, and for businesses of a certain size it can well end up being sort of two-thirds of their traffic at least. I have in the past had one role where SEO was almost useless, because which is highly unusual, because I used to work for a CCTV distributor, and what we used to do was we were selling to the man in a van that actually installs it. We weren't selling to the public. And I used to get calls from SEO people all the time. You're not on page one of Google. Do you not want to be on page one of Google? And I'd be like, no. And it totally fried their brain, because they're not used to people saying no to that. And I go in with the clients, and I'm just looking to understand. And again, this comes back to my quite classical CIM qualified type approach. I'm just looking to understand the business and the strategy first, and then fit the digital tools around it. And compared with working with me, compared with working with a big agency, you know, I'm not a specialist. I'm not as specialized in certain disciplines. I wouldn't ever turn around and say, I'm only going to do SEO and nothing else and specialize in that. So the bigger agencies that work with the bigger clients would probably be more specialized than I am. And whereas I have to look at it quite realistically and say, okay, SEO for an SME business, you know, I know enough to get you suitably ranked on that. I also know AdWords well enough to find. So it's just about building. You look at their needs and say, what do they need to achieve and by when? And you say, well, okay, what's great about SEO and AdWords is that those are high propensity channels that people are looking to buy relatively quickly. And then you've got social media, and it's like a bit like the analogy I always use is planting a few saplings for the future, to say, if we can get people interested in us through social media, keep them around through good blog content and email content, they can be the people that buy the next couple of years. It might be a long sales cycle.
Yeah, there's a key point there, isn't there, really, which is, you know, you hear a lot of the kind of solopreneurs and youpreneurs talking about having their goals and what are you doing every day to reach that goal. And that sort of seems something that seems to be missing when the companies start to get a little bit bigger, and they don't have to get massive. You know, once you start getting past sort of, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 people, all, and you sort of get wrapped up in the day-to-day running of the company, you can start to lose sight of those kind of key performance indicators, can't you? So
absolutely, or there aren't any. Sometimes and there's also not always any clear ownership of marketing, and if it might get sort of tacked onto an extra responsibility for the sales director or most senior salesperson.
Yeah, normally the person that's got the least amount of time to think about it, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
So you mentioned that you started working, or your marketing career started in some of kind of the bigger organisations. You obviously name dropped Aviva and Virgin Media and places like that. So I'd be interested to know, firstly, how did your kind of experience of marketing, or how was your what was your experience of working in those places? What were, you know, were the things you particularly liked? What were the challenges? And kind of for you as a marketeer, how did you feel that gave you a base to your marketing career?
I think you feel very well supported and sort of looked after well financially. It's not to say that I didn't get looked after, you know, didn't get decent packages later on through working from SME businesses, but you know, you have that kind of safety net, lots of people around you to learn from, and it's a great way to start. And I guess there's pretty good reasons why a lot of people take that journey that I've taken of starting off in their early career. So they've, you know, they've got deep pockets, and they'll see you through your professional qualifications and if there's any other training you need to go on. I think my advice to anyone going into that sort of background is just keep your eyes and ears open for development opportunities, and don't be afraid to ask, because it's to be brutally frank, they have the deep pockets to look after you in that regard. And they know that they'll be aware that you won't be around for 10 years for them to reap all of the benefit of that, but as long as you develop in the time that you're with them, it's a value to them. So yeah, that would be my advice. Make sure you look at all those development opportunities, and even the sort of unseen ones, like just making sure that you get in front of the right people, work closely with salespeople to understand what customers want and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I look back on those years even though I've changed direction in more recent times, I look back on those years as pretty valuable, because I was on a graduate scheme as well, which is a great help and gave me a good broad understanding of how the business operated, much broader than just marketing.
So that's a really good point there, Rob, which is, you know, the understanding the sort of bigger principles of business, the bigger ways that the business works can really help you as a marketer. From the marketeers and the consultants that I work with, it's kind of obvious that the sort of the churn, the ongoing treadmill of marketing, particularly if you're working for the same company and essentially you're trying to sell the same thing in lots of different ways, that proving yourself to your employer, the constant need for new ideas, it really can start to overwhelm you. And by actually being able to see the bigger picture and know that this little piece of a jigsaw that can seem like another campaign or another repetition of the same thing, but that it's actually fitting into a bigger picture, can really empower marketers to persevere, to keep on going, find new inspiration, all that kind of stuff. So that's really good to know. So within that sort of bigger environment, did you find that the companies that you work for, did they kind of do most of their operations in-house, or did they outsource to agencies and that kind of thing?
There's always agencies involved, and then some of them would sort of be smart in the way that they worked. So there are some financial services can be quite sort of volume driven in terms of the marketing stuff that you need. So there'd be like data sheets and things that have APRs on that are churned out regularly. And then you may as well have an in-house studio for those, but for the more creative stuff. And at the time, going back to early 2000s, you know, the digital was something that needed real specialists. And I mean, we think there's a skills shortage now, but it was probably possibly even worse then. It was like, wow, you've just come out of uni, you can do websites. Well, you know, you were a prized asset. So Yeah, I think it's about finding the things that there are certain things that need a bit of creativity and the detachment that only an agency can bring. And also they've got that sort of wider market view and they've worked in other sectors. They bring that to a business. But then, yeah, there are certain things that just need to be churned out in a relatively routine way by someone who just knows the business well. Mm.
Okay, so this is starting to go a little bit sideways from where I was thinking the discussion was going to go, to be honest. But one of the themes so my background has been purely agencies. I've worked in agencies for 11 or 12 years now. Mm-hmm. I started as a developer. That was my background, and then moved up into management, and then set up our digital agency a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. One of the themes, though, that's become quite apparent through the people I've worked with, and this applies both to individual consultants that are, I suppose, a little bit like yourself, i.e. they're the old school marketeer that's then turned themselves into a freelance consultant, you know, they've taken that leap. Mm-hmm. But they're still very much the old school marketer. They're looking for somebody else to deliver the digital, the more modern, the more up-to-date sort of delivery, if you like. But then also working with, I suppose it's more the inexperienced side of things, where you get marketing teams that are, you know, obviously there's slightly more experienced people further up the tree, but the bulk of the work is done by marketing execs or graduates that are fresh out of uni. And there seems to be this sort of disconnect between the kind of the way a marketing team tries to achieve its goals and the way an agency operates. And actually it can cause quite a lot of friction between the marketing team themselves, the internal marketing team, and a chosen agency. And it actually seems, from my experience, looking sort of from the outside in, it almost seems to be kind of a simple matter of a little bit of education on both sides of things to understand, you know, agencies need to understand that this is the way internal marketing teams work. They work with far bigger organizations, which frankly just work in a slower pace. You know, decisions take longer to make, payments take longer to process. It's a bit like the difference between sailing a dinghy if you're a freelance consultant on your own to trying to turn the QE2 cruise liner if you're working for somebody like Virgin Media. And so there seems to be a bit of a need for re-education on that side. But then I suppose this is where, because I've always worked on that side of things, where I find it interesting talking to somebody like you who's got essentially a foot in both camps to say, well, you know, what is the agency kind of viewed like? Is there such a thing as a dealing with agency process that marketing teams go through, or do they basically employ an agency and sort of hope for the best that it's going to work out?
I think there's definitely elements of that. And I think it's, I think you're right. I think there probably is fault on both sides, but when you're on one side of it, you only see that side. And as I've got more mature in years and in outlook, I look back now and I think, well, you know, I can think of ways, and I'm not going to name specifics, but I can think of times when I've worked in businesses of all sizes where they perhaps could have managed mm-hmm. their agencies a bit better. And I do think that, as you get down towards smaller businesses and SME businesses, there probably are a lot of bigger agencies that would never be interested in you. So you might be you might have to deal with some quite fledgling agencies, and then it's even more important to be discerning enough to pick a good one, and also be really smart about the way that you manage them and brief them well. And I think briefing is from the client side. They sometimes take the slightly hard-nosed view of, well, you know, we're paying them enough, they should just figure it out. But it is a partnership, and it should be, because they should be. We always talk about, as client-side marketers, about, you know, that you're an extension of our team. But then it doesn't always feel that way. So you've got to brief them well. The frustration you have client-side from your agencies is mainly when people aren't working in a cohesive way, because you want to brief, say, one person, probably the account manager or account director, once on clearly what you're doing. And then in terms of, as they bring more and more people, they might bring specialists on for specific activities. You don't want to be having to repeat the same brief to them. You'd say that the most senior agency person should be responsible for that. I guess that's a frustration. But yeah, there's certainly lots of ways they can work together more smartly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was on a train yesterday, and a few weeks ago, James Rose from Content Snare got in touch with me and asked me to write a couple of blog posts for him. The first of which actually was supposed to have today, and he hasn't got it yet. Yeah, the first one is all to do with a project kickoff meeting, and as I was writing this thing on the train yesterday and kind of going through it all in my head, the overarching theme that came from it is that really, from an agency point of view, if you the post itself is basically about, you know, a new website build job, but really the principles apply to any engagement or first engagement with an agency. And the problem that has been evident in some of the agencies I've worked for is that that first kickoff meeting has been almost, in some respects, it's even been seen as like the first upsell opportunity. And you kind of think, come on, guys, this new client has just agreed to pay us some money. In some respects, they may have paid us a deposit. So technically, they're in credit with us. Mm-hmm. Really, the point of this meeting should be to fully understand what their business requirement is, but then also start to delight them, start to show your added value. And when you look at the agencies in particular that are succeeding, they've got this emphasis on customer service. And there's so many agencies out there at the moment that seem to think that they can operate because they're God's gift to whatever element of web development or digital marketing that they're doing. And, you know, they may run off the back of one or two big contracts, but actually they sort of fail to see that their entire business model could be two or three phone calls away from completely falling apart on them. So that's really where the idea for this podcast came along, was that I work with a number of different marketing consultants and marketing teams, and this disconnect just seems to be so obvious. And this podcast, I suppose, in many respects, is my kind of attempt to try and bridge that gap a little bit. As I say, that wasn't quite necessarily what I was expecting to talk to you about, but no, interesting nonetheless. Maybe there's another podcast session in here somewhere further down the line about,
I feel sure of it,
you know, doing properly briefing and working with agencies, and maybe even hammering out, we could do a sort of hypothetical agency process model, because that's the other thing you get with agencies, is that, you know, it's super drilled into us that it's all about process, and you then spend all this time and all this effort figuring out your own process, and then if a client comes along and they don't fit your process, that everybody sort of clams up and says, oh, what do we do now?
I think it's still valuable to have sort of SOP, standard operating procedures, just so that it doesn't feel to the client that you're totally just winging it. And of course, you know, you've still got to have the flexibility to move away from it. But it's...
Have you read my blog post?
I've read some of them.
No, this one hasn't gone live. Yeah, this one hasn't gone live yet, mate. I'm kidding.
No, I've not hacked you or anything. No, don't worry.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the point I make. You know, yeah, you need to have a process, so you know what you're doing, but it also needs to have enough flex in it so it can accommodate different types of clients, the different requirements, curveballs that you may get thrown across the table, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, so, there's a thing called I mentioned it on the, obviously we're both members of the agency Trailblazer community. There's something I mentioned on there that sort of resonated with a few people. I really should start dishing out some Amazon affiliate links for all these books I recommend to people. But there's a great book called Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath, which is all about a scientific sort of checklist for making your messages and marketing sticky and making them stick in people's minds. And they break down what it is that makes a message stick in someone's mind. And one of the things they do at the outset, they look at a thing called commander's intent, which is a military thing. Military thinking has really found its way into sort of mainstream business planning in recent years, partly because we've had we've had troops in Afghanistan and what have you. But there was a few years back now, issue of the Harvard Business Review dedicated to what business can learn from the military. And there's this concept of what they call commander's intent. And what it basically says is, instead of writing insanely detailed plans, if you work in a very chaotic, dynamic, resource-restrained business, then you probably are better off working on commander's intent, where you say, what are the three or four really crucial things that we absolutely have to achieve? And how can we then get those into the minds of people so that they can then think flexibly and they can make decisions knowing what those key things are that they want to achieve. So that's worth a look. If you just Google Commander's Intent, you'll probably find a few.
Commander's Intent.
Yeah, so it's that's something that I think is for digital agencies and freelancers and for SME businesses as well. Very much, it's a more fluid, realistic way of thinking.
Brilliant. I'll dig a couple of those out and drop them in the show notes. So and cool. I'll also put a link to Amazon for that book as well.
Cool.
So no, that's great. Thanks, mate. So just moving a little bit further into the present, I suppose we should have maybe mentioned that Aviva is a, well, are they an international insurance company or just a national insurance company?
They are international, yeah. I mean, it's so they took over what was Norwich Union in the UK, and right. Norwich Union itself had taken on several of it. So they are a massive global brand now, yeah.
Yeah, so Aviva is obviously an insurance company, and Virgin Media is, if you weren't aware, is a, well, it's a telecoms and TV provider, isn't it, in the digital services provider in the UK.
Obviously
part of the Richard Branson Virgin Group. So just moving a little bit further towards the present then, Rob, firstly, what made you take the dive from working for these sort of conglomerates, firstly down into SMEs and then I suppose down to the SMEest of, or the smallest of the SMEs, which is obviously working for yourself?
It was a combination of things, really. I completed my CIM studies, so there was less dependency on a sort of organization with deep pockets to fund me through qualifications, but also it was quite a sort of organic process, really. Partly involved, you know, looking around what jobs there were at the time, and I'd sort of moved around the country and relocated. So I'm from Birmingham originally. My wife, I live up in Huddersfield nowadays, and it's just moved up there for personal reasons. My wife's from there, so there was some real world reasons behind it, like the practicalities of what jobs were available where and when I was looking. But it's I may have stayed in the corporate world slightly longer if things had been different. But then the first permanent job I took up north was with a large insurance broker, and I had a lot of knowledge there from having fallen into this career in insurance from school. So that was a job I was able to really get my teeth into quickly and have an understanding of the market, and it just sort of grew from there. So quite a few sort of SME type roles followed, really. It just seemed to be the ones I got the most interest in. I think you do sort of, even if you don't do it on purpose, get yourself a little bit pigeonholed if you've had sort of two or three SME based roles on your CV in a row. It is quite hard to find your way back into corporate. But then I sort of reached a point where I thought I'm quite happy as I am. I've got more autonomy now, combined with the experience and the confidence in taking more of a leading role in marketing. So it all happened quite naturally.
Okay, cool. And then from there, you then obviously progressed to your own thing, Click to Sale.
Yeah.
So did you start that as a bit of a side hustle, or did you know,
yeah, it's been an on and off side hustle since about 2009, and then there was one role that was one day job I had that was very, very all consuming. So it sort of went completely on the back burner, the freelance stuff, for a while. And it just reached a point where there was one last day job that I won't name names, but there's one last day job where I just thought, well, okay, this isn't really what I went into. I think I will take the plunge now. And I had, in the meantime, built up quite a bit on the side just through, I do bits of work through agencies that don't have, that they might be quite design led and they don't have an in-house marketing person to do digital marketing activity. And I'll do that for their clients. So that's quite another interesting angle to look at the whole market, because I then go into there and with some of them, I'm asking sort of challenging strategy-based questions because my CIM background that haven't come up in any of their previous meetings. I'm saying, well, what are they trying to achieve? I can do this, but is that consistent with what they're trying to achieve?
It's the difference between what a client needs and what a client wants, isn't it? You
know? Yeah, and sometimes they want social media because they see they see that as a big, well, we haven't done that yet, and that's probably why we're struggling, because we haven't got on board with Twitter, and they don't realize the dwindling benefits of doing organic social media as an actual source of traffic and leads, or they they will be everything that's been done so far can sometimes be because of their obsession with one particular competitor. And it's just all about knocking them off page one of Google. And you're just like, right, okay, is that, let's take a step back and take the emotion out of it. Is that actually what you want need to achieve? Sometimes it is. Yeah. Sometimes the answer is still yes. And you figure out a plan with them.
Yeah, that question of, so just imagine that we've walked in this morning and you are now top, you know, you have now beaten xyz.com in Google. How has the world changed? Mm. Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. Fully agree with that. So you're also at a point a bit similar to me where you're looking at your new podcast as well, which you've slightly beaten me to get episode 000 out there. Yours is already up in iTunes and mine's still sat on my desktop. But do you want to tell us a bit about it, how it came about, and give us a bit of background?
Yeah, so it's called the Digital All-Rounder, and it's very much aimed at in-house marketing people or business owners. Not to say that I will turn agency people away at the door or anything silly like that, but I think it's important to go into these things like you have with this one, of having a clear target market in mind. So the reason it's called the Digital All-Rounder is just because my observation is when you work in-house as an in-house marketer for an SME, all those challenges I've already mentioned, like nobody really owns marketing and you're being managed by people who don't really understand marketing. So you've not really got the support network you have within a corporate. So what you need to do is, and again, as another point I think I made earlier, the bigger agencies aren't really interested in you because you're not big enough. So I've had conversations even as a freelancer with a client where there's bits and pieces that are a bit too small for me to pick up. So really the in-house person needs to build their own skills to quite an extent now. And we have this, like I said, a skill shortage within digital marketing, and they have to get up to speed pretty quickly. And but I would say it's the reason I've gone with the name Digital All-Rounder, they have to be like the Jess Ennis Hill of digital marketing at six or seven different things, rather than than saying, oh, I need to be the Usain Bolt of, say, SEO. They have to be good enough at various things. But I firmly believe if you learn from the right people, you can get good enough across several different disciplines like SEO, AdWords, social, email marketing, etc., to survive in an SME business and do better than most of your competitors.
I'd fully agree with that, Rob, to be honest. I mean, there's that adage, isn't there, that a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. And in some respects, that's still true. But there's kind of a base level of knowledge with these things, which is a little bit more than dabbling, but it's a long way away from expert. If you can cover the bases and do them properly, particularly when it comes to some of the more black art type of things like SEO, that, you know, yeah, if you can do the basics, do them properly and do them consistently, then actually you can see some very good results.
And fit them all to an overall plan. And yeah, because for example, to go off topic slightly, I mean, I've done press releases in the past that have got into publications, and there was a time when they weren't getting into publications because I was writing stuff that you see people do it now, and I've been there as well. You sort of write stuff that's interesting to you, but when with hindsight it's a bit self-congratulatory. But if you put yourself in the shoes of a journalist, what I did in later times was sort of just get together the basics to be able to write a decent press release that had notes to editors that would tell them all the background about you. You actually had written it from their perspective of creating it, telling them what the story was and why it was interesting and why it should get featured. You get a decent quality photo that's not an iPhone snap. You give them all of that and you think to yourself, well, okay, if this goes across the desks of enough journalists, why would they not feature it? Yeah. And it's taking that same approach to say SEO, AdWords and everything else, and helping them get up to speed. So I'd be getting specialists, like we're going to do a reciprocal episode, aren't we, on mine? Talk about we're subject to be agreed, but there's lots of overlap between our skills and our audiences. And it's nice to get other people on the show talking about it so they're not just hearing it from me.
Yeah, no, absolutely, fully agree with that. So, that's already on iTunes, isn't it? You can search iTunes for the Digital All-Rounder, and
yes,
you pop up. I'll pop a link in the show notes as well.
Cool.
So, for any guys that want to reach out to you, Rob, I know we've got our marketing development podcast group on Facebook. You are the very first member to have joined it, so thank you for that. So far, you've been bombarded with me filling things, popping things in there, so it doesn't look empty when people come across it. So obviously you're in the group, which people can join and contact you through there. But are there any other ways that they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, they get to me through my website, which is clicktosale.co.uk. That's the word two, T-O, not yep. the number two. My Twitter handle is @clicktosale, spelled the same way.
Fantastic. I'll drop those in the show notes as well.
On LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn as well, Brill. Yeah. I'll drop links to all of those in the show notes too, so people can click through. So, mate, I really appreciate your time. It's snowing in Yorkshire. We're both based in Yorkshire, and we woke up and the world was white, even though it's 2 days away from March. So I know you've got some childcare things going on, as do I. So I won't keep any more of your time, mate. But thanks for that. Really appreciate it.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much, and we'll speak soon. And you never know, we may be back on here again.
Yeah, I hope so. Cheers, mate.
Cool. All right, thanks, Pete. Speak to you soon.
So there we have it, episode 2 wrapped up. And what a good episode it was. Some proper value from Rob. Thanks again. Next week, we're talking to the one and only Lee Jackson from the Agency Trailblazer community. And that really is a brilliant episode. I really did enjoy recording it. So look out for that one. It'll be in your podcast player in the next week or so. And don't forget to join our Facebook community over at peteeverett.com/group. See you soon.